Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
I want them to know that I'm not perfect and I don't have all the answers and I'm still growing and learning and trying to be better, and we're all in this together.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Brent Owen, head coach at Lenoir Ryan University. Coach Owen began his career at the University of Southern Indiana before taking a unique path into head coaching with stops at Tell City High School, as well as Eastern New Mexico, and now Lenoir Ryan. His journey through different levels of basketball has helped shape his approach to leadership, recruiting, and program building. In this episode, we discuss why he chose to leave the college ranks early in his career to become a high school head coach, how he identifies the right personalities and dynamics when building a roster, and creative ways head coaches can grow attendance and build long-term fan support within a program.
What's up, everybody, and thank you all for tuning in to another episode. Your host, Sto Caputo, Alan Major, the Rising Coaches podcast here today. We have alongside us the head coach, Lenoir Ryan University. Ladies and gentlemen, Brent Owen. Coach Owen, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You got it, man. Thank you.
I know we were just talking before, and Major even said that the world got a lot smaller. As soon as you hop on, you always be able to connect with other people. And we were talking about this the other day, and it was funny. Somebody mentioned to me, they're like, I feel like I know somebody that we had mutuals to. I'm like, this is basketball. This world is a lot smaller than you really think it is. And it's crazy. It really is crazy. But we're excited to be able to get you on here. I guess just to go over some of the things that you've done, as we typically like to do, go back to your initial start. And there's one thing I saw about your history that I really like that I want to make sure we highlight. And that is, a lot of people want that title, right? That head coaching title. That's what they're chasing. Specifically, Division I, Division II, college a lot of times. But they want it quickly. The one experience I saw that you had years developing inside a successful program to start before taking over your own, but your first opportunity was at a high school, okay? So the reason I highlight that is because everybody, I've heard this before, so people are like, oh, I got this, I'm an assistant at a very strong program, a powerhouse, and why aren't I not getting Division I, Division II, Division III head coaching positions? It doesn't work like that. So right. I want to ask you and talk to you a little bit about what made you take that head coaching position at a high school early on, leave the college ranks, and then help you progress and move forward?
Yeah, that was really, I had served as a graduate assistant for 2 years. I had finished my master's, and man, there's way more coaches than there are coaching jobs, right? And it was just hard to find something. And so I did my third year as a volunteer on Coach Rodney Watson's staff at Southern Indiana. We had another great year, won a conference tournament championship. But I was making literally $0. And frankly, I was broke. And I had met a pretty girl that loved basketball, and she had to buy the first dinner when we went out on our first date. And I really thought that maybe I should start making some money. And I was in charge of our team camp. And we had a high school call and just say, hey, we're not going to be able to make it because our coach just quit. And this was in July. And I said, well, man, I'm looking for a job. I've been waiting for something to open up on Coach Watson's staff. And Derek Tillman, who Coach Major knows, had some interviews at Division I, and it kind of wasn't shaking. I got to get a job. At 25 years old, I got the opportunity to be a head coach. And, man, so important for me in my development, because it just all the way back, I had great youth coaches. In Illinois, there's actually a state tournament for middle school. And I thought everybody did that, but it's something that's maybe unique to Illinois. But so we went to state and middle school, which was sounds like we had a caravan driving 4 hours and lights and sirens when we came back into town with the championship. And so won in middle school and then went to high school and kind of the same thing. We won about 80% of our games in high school. And then I went to Southern Indiana, and my freshman year, we were ranked number one in the nation in the preseason and just tons of success there. And then Coach Watson came in and we kept winning championships. And so I had really, literally up to that point, you just show up and you win championships. And then I took the high school coaching job, and just at 25 years old, had all the answers and knew everything you had to do to win, and we didn't win. And it was very humbling for me. So I think really two things that I took from that. One, it made me be a much better self-evaluator, right? I got a big slice of the humble pie and realized like, hey, man, you may not have it all together. You better start looking, doing a real hard look in the mirror and seeing some things that you need to improve and get better at. And one of those, I think, was just, I had a teaching degree and I wasn't sure that I was really approaching the coaching aspect, I guess a teacher would. I think maybe at 25, I was skipping steps, right? And just kind of trying to get to the whole really fast and instead of breaking it down and teaching it really well. And that was something else I took from that is just, man, you number one, always look in the mirror, right? So on my board, it's kind of over my left shoulder here. It says 55 and 15, be better. And so we've been 55 and 15 the last 2 years, hung a couple banners, but I told our staff this spring, I don't want us to just think that we have this all figured out, right? Let's be great self-evaluators this spring, this summer. Let's figure out things that we can be better at, things that we need to change. And then the other piece was just trying to be a better teacher of the game and really slow things down and teach and then speed it up when they've learned it. Those the huge step. I really need some humble pie, to be frank with you. And I got a taste of it at Tell City, Indiana.
Talk about, I always love to hear this because everybody kind of has a moment. I'm laughing as I even ask the question, but what was that, your first head coaching moment?
Yeah.
Like where it really kind of hits you, right? You know what I mean? There's a moment where you're kind of like, all right, this is different than I thought it was.
That's my very first game. I was in Canelton, Indiana. Canelton is literally connected to, it's like a suburb of Tell City. If a town of 10,000 people can have a suburb. And it was a really tiny town, and they had not been good at all in basketball. They've been really poor, but that particular year they had the best team they'd ever had. And
of course they did.
Exactly. And we were very good. And so I remember being in Canelton, Indiana, first game I'm ever coaching. We're down at half. This is not good. They've beat Canelton 15 years in a row. I remember I'm doing kind of my first halftime coaches meeting. And right outside the locker room door, but it's like on the side of the bleachers in this little hallway. And this guy comes looking over the top of the bleachers. And he's like, Coach, that's the worst team I've ever seen. And like talking to me. And I was like, all right, this is where we're going to start. This is where we're
starting. Can only go up.
Only go up from here. That's right.
I love the fact that you mentioned teaching because the biggest step skip that young coaches make, I did it, is you focus on the outcome instead of the process. And that to me is the essence of the difference between coaching and teaching.
Right.
Right. Because sometimes if you're so focused on coaching, meaning how do we get to the finish line and how fast can we get there? And teaching is about understanding, taking it a lap at a time and be smart and take your pit stops when you need them. And right. That's the difference as we, I guess I'm here in Indianapolis and they just had the race yesterday. Maybe I got that on my mind. I don't know why I took that road to talk in that direction, but that's literally the difference is young coaches, you want to win so badly and you want to, and for good reasons, right? You want to establish yourself. You want to be confident. You want to prove yourself and you can skip steps. And I'm so glad you said that because if young coaches can grasp the idea when they're just starting out, whether it's as a young head coach or even as an assistant, of just understanding that there's a process to everything, whether it's player development, where it's building a defense, whether it's just take your pick. If they can really embrace that, that'll really accelerate their growth as a coach, for sure.
Yeah. I had another moment. Too.
No, let it rip.
I had another one. I got my first opportunity to be a college head coach at Eastern New Mexico University. And I had really, Coach Watson, who I worked for at Southern Indiana, he was an exceptional defensive coach coming from Floorburn U at Southern Illinois and all the success and the physicality and the toughness and the rebounding. And that piece, he was really strong at that piece. And he let me, I'd actually played for a great offensive coach. Two of our 4 years, we led the country in field goal percentage. And so when he came, he let me take on a big role in the offensive piece. While I was at Southern Indiana, I did a ton of scouting and I was responsible for scouting Bellarmine University for 7 seasons and got Davenport and we were pretty bitter rivals, but I definitely had respect for the way they ran off. Their offense was spectacular. I've been referred to as a team that doesn't dribble, just move the ball relentlessly. I think shot 52, 53% consistently as a team. It was unbelievable. And so when I was thinking about what I wanted to do offensively, it was like, I want to be that guy. I want to backdoor people and move the ball and everybody shoots it. And so I got Eastern New Mexico. I was like, this is what we're going to do. And now Louisville is a private institution in Louisville, Kentucky, where there's a lot of pretty things around, a lot to do for young men, private education. And I was at Eastern New Mexico in Portales, New Mexico, and there's a lot of great people there that I still love. And I'm actually going back to visit this summer for a wedding. But in terms of like pretty things to look at and things for college kids to do, that wasn't it. And it certainly wasn't private education. And I went in with this mentality of this is who we're going to be and this is what it's going to look like. And then after a year, I was like, the guys that go to Bellarmine aren't coming to Eastern New Mexico, right? And so we have to completely shift. So we wanted to be pretty and really just great offensively. And then I completely did a 180 after year one and just said, we got to be tough. We just got to find some dudes that don't care about anything else but basketball. We're going to have to maybe sacrifice a little. We were picked 15th out of 16th in our league. So it wasn't like we had the winning tradition to recruit to either. We just had to go recruit some dogs, frankly, that were just going to be tough. And we needed to be great defensively, great on the glass, and then try to figure it out on offense. And one of the things in that first year of going that route is I figured out we really needed to get to the free throw line and try to be efficient with that. Anyway, that was a huge shift in my perspective too. But that was one of those coaching moments where it was like, I need to shift directions here.
I love it.
I want to ask about one thing in particular, but I don't want to stray away from your background yet, because I have two questions, I guess, is where I'm going. One of them is about the recruiting aspect, which we'll get to later on, especially about kind of what you said, finding your dynamic as to what to bring into a program, I feel might be difficult, or not necessarily. You've been a head coach in multiple places, so it's like, I'm sure you have to go to a different place, see what you need to bring in, and it's completely different from, as you mentioned, from one school to the next. But talking on your head coaching experience first, that first year, no matter where, we'll say Tell City or even just Lenore Ryan, is there anything that you look back on the first year and you're like, I really wish we could do this differently, or I would have changed this?
Certainly at Tell City, I would have completely done everything different.
Yeah, from the guy above.
Yeah, I was really.
Hold the halftime meetings in a different spot.
Yeah, step one. But no, I was kind of treating 14-year-olds like 22-year-olds, and I really needed to be a better teacher of the game and be more fundamental-based versus offensive scheme-based or defensive scheme-based. I would have went back and worked on fundamentals more. But Eastern New Mexico, I kind of told you my approach to that job would have been different in making my style fit what the university was. Lenore Ryan, I think that experience hopefully kind of showed through in year one here, where I knew who I wanted to be, right? And I knew what would work for me as a coach. We want to be bigger, stronger, more physical. We want to be really tough on the glass. We broke the rebound margin record at Lenore Ryan this year, led the Lone Star in rebound margin the year before I left. And we wanted to be about that, right? And be tough defensively, and then be really just as efficient as we could, throw the ball inside, find easy baskets on the offensive end, and kind of play inside out. That was at Eastern New Mexico. It was like, man, okay, we're recruiting against West Texas, Angelo State. We're not going to get the same level of guys that they're going to get, especially early on. And so it's like, how can we be different? And we really just decided, let's be as big as we possibly can. Our wingspans, in year three, we won the tournament championship, coming from a team that basically had no success for a really long time. But we had 7'3 wingspan, 6'11 wingspan, 6'11 wingspan, 6'9 wingspan in our starting lineup. And so we were just real big and long defensively, and then we attacked people in transition, but really found that identity. So then that worked, right? So when I got to Lenore Ryan, it's okay, that's – I think we can do that and be great here. And frankly, I think that this league was even a little bit smaller. Leagues kind of take on the personality of the best teams, right? And so the best teams had kind of been shooting and really skilled. And so I think we brought a new look to this conference. We're able to go big and have a huge advantage with size and strength. And the result of that was we won 29 games in conference tournament championship and a regional championship, and set a lot of new standards and expectations.
Man, and you said what? It was 56-15? Was that what you mentioned?
55-15 the last
55. Two. And I was looking too, this past year was 26-9. So yep. You guys can do the math amongst a couple of years, but that's remarkable. How do you sustain that type of success? Because I feel like that's the golden question, right? Especially in today's landscape, you have success a lot of times. I don't want to speak for your program, but I just historically with basketball now, you have a successful program, everybody's like, all right, I'm going to go Division I, I'm going to jump ship, I'm going to go make my money or go somewhere else. How do you sustain that success granted over now 2 years, but just like even mentally, how are you looking at approaching it long haul?
Yeah, I think that's obviously a multifaceted question, but one thing that stands out to me in kind of the trends of coaching right now is there's a lot of Division II guys who are having a lot of success, especially at the higher levels, guys like Josh Schertz and Ben McCollum and plenty of other names that we go down the list of. But I think that the way this has shifted has really been an advantage for Division II coaches because we've always had the transfer portal, right? Because Division I guys could always move down without sitting out. And so when we were at Southern Indiana, we're sitting there as a Division II powerhouse. We had transfers from Oregon, Iowa. We had the Big Ten Freshman of the Year from Illinois and Jamar Smith. And we had really good players from really high levels. But we were always – Jeff Goodman used to put out like a list before the transfer portal, before all that. He would have a list that he would post on a website that just had all – he would literally call the coaches like, hey, who's leaving? And that was the only way you could find out was to get that list. And it might have – now it's got 2,000 names on it. It might have had 200 names on it. And we would literally call like every guy on that list and just try to get transfers. But I think that what came with that is we dealt with a lot of one-year guys, right? And because it was that senior going into a senior year, he didn't want to sit out because he was going to graduate. So it was like, I don't want to sit out to go to another Division I, but this isn't a good fit for me. Let's go to the best D2 we can find. And when you're coaching one-year guys, when you're coaching guys for 1 year, there's a different approach to it. And I think that guys who have done that at the Division II level understand that approach. The number one thing is, and they are not going to fully trust you until January. It takes that long for real trust to start building, I would say. And even if you're really intentional about it, which we're trying to be, but that's just something you got to understand and you got to know where you're at. You can't assume that they fully trust you, right? You've got to just know that it's just going to take a while. And so I think having an understanding of that is really important. The other thing that Division II we've always had is we've had a scholarship budget, not just scholarships, right? So we've had guys in the locker room who are making different amounts in scholarship dollars, right? So one guy's on a full, this other guy might be on a half. And there's an art to that too in dealing with, now everybody's dealing with it because of NIL. They got a guy making $1 million, they got a guy making $500,000. That's an interesting situation in the locker room. Right. And I think Division II guys have experience in dealing with that and understanding how to handle those conversations and get through that. So I think that's a big part of the reason why people have had success. But I think you got to build trust. You got to have an identity. Ours, we have trust and toughness written everywhere. We really try to be intentional about building trust. I think that in this transfer portal era, I've been way more intentional about building trust as step one. And the way we do that is maybe a little bit unconventional. Number one, day one, when our guys show up to campus, I'm going to have them over to my home. I want them to see me as a father. I want them to see me as a husband. I want them to know that I've got more going on than just basketball. I want them to know my children. I want them to feel at home. I want them to know where I live in case they need anything too, right? So I want them to feel welcome right away. And then literally like the next day, we go and play paintball. And that kind of raises some eyebrows with some recruits at times. But man, we go out, it's in a woods and it's, so the way you build trust in what I've studied, Brené Brown is read Brené Brown's books. If you're a coach out there that wants to learn about building trust, and I was not going to read some soft book about trust. My wife said, you are going to read this book because you really need it. And it completely changed my approach to building trust. But vulnerability is how you build trust, right? And there's some vulnerability when you're out in the woods and it hurts a little bit when you get hit with a paintball. And so the guys don't know what to expect at first and they're real quiet. They don't know each other yet. And then one of them gets hit they're on teams, right? And one of them will get hit with a paintball. And then all of a sudden it's, hey, we got a guy on the right. We got a guy on the left. Like, you take the left side, I'll take the right side. And they just really start talking. And then the other piece is, for example, last year, you're wearing a face mask to protect yourself. And I got hit right in the middle of the face by our 7'2" center. And anyway, so in between games, I have to walk up to the group with my face just covered in paint. And that was an opportunity for them. Like, some of the returners who knew me pretty well knew that we can give Coach a hard time here. So they're ragging on me, Coach. How do you? And then that kind of opens up the other guys. Like, okay, like this is, there's some vulnerability here with Coach and with each other. They can joke on each other. And I just think that's a great way to start. And then finally, we always do I shouldn't say finally, because there's a million things we do, but we do a trip to Gatlinburg where we rent out a cabin for a weekend. It's got a pool table and an arcade, and it's got a movie theater in the basement. And we do a bunch of team building activities while we're there, kind of question and answer, getting to know guys. But I hang out try to play pool till 2 or 3 in the morning, let them know that I'm just, again, not the guy that's just screaming at them every day, right? And trying to build relationships like that. But I think in this day and age of the transfer portal, very long-winded question to how do you sustain this? You've got to start with building trust, and you've got to be way more intentional about that than you've ever had to be before.
Yeah. That's well said. Phenomenal. Yeah. What happens is whether it's June 1st or June 15th or whatever that is, July 1st, whenever that clock starts ticking, you realize you got about 9 months. Everybody's given 24 hours a day. Right. Everybody's given, and I know it's not fully equal across the board in terms of when people can start and all that, but just whenever they're there, the moment, I love the fact that you said the moment they get there, you just start kicking these doors down. That to me, even when it's a little messy and it's a little awkward or it's a little fumbly or whatever it is, they'll still feel the authenticity, even if it's not, all that stuff isn't going to be all like a guy in Goosebumps, right?
Right.
It's okay though,
right?
Because they're still going to feel like, man, this guy, I know I want to play more, but I'm dealing with the real guy right here.
Yeah.
Or I know I'm not getting all the shots I want, but man, like the guy tells me the truth.
Yeah.
You kick down these doors from the get go.
Yeah.
And then you keep kicking them over and over. So,
yeah. You can probably see right above my head is this kind of this personal sign that I have in my office, but you use one of those words at the bottom there, says logical, fair, and real. And I want all our decision-making to be logical. I want everything that we do to have a reason for why we do it. And I want our team to understand that. And I tell them, we have a round table in my office. And the idea is when I'm sitting behind the desk, like I need you to listen to me. I'm the boss right now and I'm sitting behind the desk and you're going to listen. Right. But when we go to the round table, we all have an equal seat at the table. And so if you don't understand why I'm doing something, man, come in and ask, challenge my beliefs, challenge my thoughts. I better be able to back up why I believe that way. And I'm going to be willing to listen. And there have been times where we've sat at that table and I'm like, man, you know what? Let's try your idea. And so that's the logical piece. The fair piece is that we never want anyone to feel like they're treated unfairly. I don't care who your dad is or where you come from or what you look like. Everyone is going to have the same opportunity to earn playing time, earn minutes in that piece. And then the real piece is what you're talking about. I want them to know me, know who I really am. I want them to know that I'm not perfect and I don't have all the answers. And I'm still growing and learning and trying to be better. And we're all in this together, but I do want them to know who I really am, because I think that's the only way that you can really have trust.
No doubt. And the thing that a lot of what you have said for that, that's why there's so much trust, is because you have all these different activities. I really believe in those type of things. Schools that maybe don't have the budgets to be able to do that, you could definitely find 1,000 other things that don't necessarily require any budget, right? Bring them to a park, have them play flag football. I don't know. That's just something little, but the first thing, and I'm still stuck on this, you said there's a 7'2" kid walking around playing paintball. He is a walking target. Listen, he got me by 6 inches, okay? I was playing laser tag the other day. I was getting late, shot up. So good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. But
I got him back. I got him back, by the way.
Yeah, you can only stand behind a tree for so long. Yeah.
But those experiences are the ones, those type of things are the things that you step away from basketball and everybody remembers those. I still remember all the times in college that we had team building, team bonding exercises, and you remember all those things. Heck, there's even kids that would have names, nicknames from them, right? And those carried from their freshman all the way to their senior year, and it's just from that one moment. And they're good names, some of them. But they meant – no, but that's awesome. That definitely says a lot, like getting your work in early on so then it later pays off. And again, you've had a lot of success so far. But going back to now, you obviously have to find the right people for that. So we'll circle back to what I was asking before, and what you had mentioned is finding the right people for your program. Do you find the right people that not only just match your program but exactly exemplify your school, will best fit your school, what you're looking for?
Yeah, for sure. And again, I think that kind of goes back to different universities, different situations require maybe some different approaches to recruiting. One thing here at Lenoir Ryan is we have an incredible community base. The support from the community, the alumni, we've led our league in attendance the last 2 years. We'll get 5,000 people to a football game here. We are very visible in this community. And the people in this community want to know the team. Like they want to have real relationships with the guys. And so we've got to be mindful of that, right? Like when we're bringing guys in, this is a big deal to this program. We've got to bring in good guys who are going to represent this university in the right manner and be about education. We're really about education here and getting your degree. And so we're very upfront about all of that in recruiting, right? Like rule number one, we tell our guys is class attendance and effort is non-negotiable. And rule number two is choose right over wrong. And so we've got to find guys that can do those two things right off the bat. We tell them there's no wink, wink here. We're not doing your homework. You're going to go to class. You're going to do your homework. If you don't show up to class, there's going to be a consequence for that. We don't need a million rules for a Saturday night. We're going to recruit guys who know the difference between right and wrong. And we're going to ask them to choose right. And then rule number three is enjoy playing basketball. And we've got to have guys that love the game because we, as a staff, I've got two great assistant coaches that are, we're all the same, man. We're all trying to be better. We're all in on being great at this, being great coaches, being great at development. And with that, our schedule is very demanding for our guys. Like it's individual workouts, weight room, it's film, it's practice, it's study table, and eat good and sleep good and do it all over again, right? And just stack days like that. And guys that don't love it, the work is too much for the guys that don't love it. So again, we just try to be extremely clear about that up front. Frankly, I try to scare guys away. And if it scares them, that's fine, man, that you're going to the wrong place. But I think it's really important, number one, to kind of have that foundation. And then obviously the second piece is looking at the basketball piece and how everything fits basketball-wise. Like I said, we want to be bigger, stronger, more physical. We want to be great at rebounding. We want guys to have a nose for the ball. We have get the ball written everywhere. Like pretty simple concept, right? Get the ball. We don't have the ball, get the ball. And team, we're big on offensive rebounding and big on taking care of the basketball. And if you can take care of the basketball and get offensive rebounds, you end up with more possessions and you end up with more shots, right? Anyway, just trying to find like maybe some of those little things. The skill usually, if you've been doing this a while, is the obvious piece, right? But like when I'm watching film on a guy, if I see a guy that there's a ball that came off the rim and four guys are going to jump for it, like the guy that comes out of that pile with the ball, like that guy's really attractive to me. And I just think guys that do that are the real kind of tough. And those are the type of guys that win in March. Obviously the basketball piece is one piece. We say we're not amassing talent, like we're building a team, right? And it's a beeline quote, I think, but we're really trying to make the pieces all fit together. We want a guy that can score on the block. We want wings that can defend and score in transition. We want point guards that can run the show. And we got to have shooting at that two guard spot. We got to have a four man that can really defend and rebound and just try to recruit as many unselfish guys as you can that are really about winning. And that's probably the hardest part now with the transition. We had a big guy, our that 7-foot-2 kid we talked about, he's moved up and he's made a lot of money, right? And our guys know that. And they see the opportunity, man, if I do this and this, actually he played 28 minutes and averaged 13 points a game. But he was super efficient. He shot 68% from the field and he broke the school record for block shots. So, man, defend your position and be really efficient. It's not just about putting points up. And the other thing is he won 55 games in 2 years, right? And that matters to people. So we say if we win, we all eat, and just trying to recruit guys that understand that perspective too and are a little bit unselfish.
Man, so many good things there, what you just shared. The thing that I love the most is you laid out right away the identity of the school and the community. And we were just literally talking to Coach Harbert in West Virginia, Doug, on his pod a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about the Oklahoma Standard, which is the E60 documentary about how the Oklahoma City Thunder have basically married themselves to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And what Sam Presti started doing is taking every team to the bomb site and to the memorial. Every time a new team comes in before they start training camp, that's one of the first things he would do. And it literally would connect this team to, like, all right, you're here to play basketball. We get that. But this is a city that wants to embrace you guys, but you also need to know what this city has been through. Yes. So he kicks down that and it's not about you door.
Right. Right.
From the jump. It's an unbelievable, get your tissues ready if you haven't watched it. It's an unbelievable documentary. But you've done that there. And so now, and it's in a cycle now where guys that come are told by the guys that are there, like, hey, man, this place loves us. We got to love them back. And when when you guys do community service, that's not just like a box check, like, oh, yeah, we just dropped off some turkeys here and there. It's like you guys are serving the community. So now it's a difference between serving the community and just doing community service.
And that's one thing that we really talk to our guys about is we're an hour from Charlotte. If they want to go watch just high level basketball, right, they can go watch the Hornets. But what we have to establish here, if we want to lead the league in attendance, is we've got to establish connection, right? Like I told you, we have great attendance at our football games. So one thing that we do is every home football game where we're not, don't have something that we have to go do basketball wise, we're at the tailgate. There's a great tailgating atmosphere, but we feed our guys. There's a basketball alum that cooks some food and feeds the guys and we tailgate. But then we say we have Manly Mondays. And so we try to teach things on Mondays that are how to be a man. And the first Manly Monday is always how to shake a hand and look someone in the eye and introduce yourself, right? And so we'll do that Manly Monday before the first football game and teach them how to introduce themselves. They have to learn web to web, firm hand, firm grip, you know, that's right. Hand at the elbow, look them in the eye, introduce yourself. And before they walk out of the locker room that day, I make them all practice with me and they have to pass the test before I let them exit. But send them out into that tailgate area. And I want them to walk around to every tent and just introduce themselves, let them know that when our games are going to be and invite them personally to show up. So, yeah, that's a big piece of how we develop community. Another thing that we do that I think is a little bit different is after every home game, we send our players on a loop. We started this at Eastern New Mexico and continue to hear. But so we exit the handshake line, and then we make a loop all the way around our arena, and we just literally shake people's hands and tell them thanks for coming. And that's win or lose. And it's been we've been 25-2 at home the last 2 years. So it's been – but win or lose – they're going to go over there. They're going to thank people for coming and invite them back to the next game. And I've had so many people just say, man, like, that's awesome. That's different. But it's a simple thing. But I think it's been really valuable in connecting the community to our players and building those relationships that are going to lead to increased attendance over time.
100%. No doubt. Go ahead, Doug. Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm sure you get a lot of people who love that. It's probably one of those things where as soon as they get in their car, they leave. You got a family, and I bet you two of them are looking at each other. Wow, that was really impressive. I've gone to college practices where the players come over and introduce themselves. They say something. Now, I know, obviously, being a college coach, like I've heard my head coaches before, hey, make sure we go say hi to anybody who comes in. But that's the standard. That's what you do.
Yeah.
And the practices that I've been to, they come by. Nobody says anything to them. They all introduce themselves, shake their head, and walk away. And it's just like, wow. You definitely feel some type of way. It is very right. – It's unique.
Right.
No, I love it. And then on the basketball court, what you guys have done, whether you realize it or not, is you've become the Detroit Pistons of your league. Because if you talk about some of the formulas that you mentioned, gritty over pretty.
Yep.
Right. Great length at every position. You know, rebounding the ball, multi-positional defenders, toughness, just all these little things that are controllable. Right. Who knows when the ball is going to be let it rip. From any range, you don't know if it's going in or not, but you guys have embraced the controllable stuff in terms of being tough and being gritty and being, we use this phrase a lot on this pod, as everyday guys. And you've now filled your locker room with everyday guys. And now your program has a DNA. Yeah. Your program has a DNA. Now there's an identity there. It's a winning program. Shouldn't be for everybody. There's a reason, right? And you've got an unbelievable filter in terms of how you weed people out and how you draw the right people in. The best part now is that your antennas for who you want, both staff-wise and in the locker room, are as attuned as you want them to be, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, we're completely fine with not being everybody's cup of tea, right?
You're right.
Okay with us. This is That's really hard. Right. Sustained success is extremely difficult, and it takes what it takes, and it takes the work. And that's why I tell all our recruits, we were really efficient offensively last year. We were, I think, second in the nation in true shooting percentage. And going into the NCAA tournament, we were leading the nation in three-point field goal percentage. And everybody's, man, like, you must have all, like, this magic offense. And I'm like, no, there's nothing. We work. We do the work, and then we keep everything really simple. We recruit good players, and we try to make it decision-based offense. And we try to get guys to be unselfish and move the ball. And we've been top 15 in assists the last 4 years and in the country. And so just really try to get guys to buy into just the simple things. And really, it's the work. There are no magic plays. We're good because we work really hard and we develop guys and make them better. And we really believe that. And again, we try to be completely clear about that on the front end so they know what they're getting themselves into.
For your three rules that you mentioned is enjoy the last one, to enjoy playing basketball, finding guys who love the game. The beauty of those three is if you bring people in that embrace and fully understand the third one, they're usually going to take care of the first two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like guys that love the game are going to go to class. Guys that love the game, they're going to understand right from wrong. Like when it's that moment of truth and it's 12:30 at night on a Saturday and it's like, this is not feeling right. This bar is getting a little dicey in here. Yeah. Fellas, it's time to go.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But no,
the third one, literally, the guys that understand.
So I stole this from Coach Rodney Watson. Those were his three rules for our program in Southern Indiana. I know you know Coach Watson, but he's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, my God.
Winning his coach, but was at Southern Illinois for 21 years under Rich Heron, Bruce Weber, Matt Painter, and then Chris Lowry finally. And anyway, so had a great background. I was so fortunate to be able to learn from him and just such a genuine good human being, and really learned a lot from him on earning respect versus demanding respect and approaching these guys with, he has a counseling degree. And he said he did counseling because it was the easiest masters, but he didn't know every day of his coaching career, right?
That's right. Number two. I got the same exact thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But seriously, like some little nuances that I learned from him. For example, when he was talking to somebody, a player about something that was maybe a little sensitive or a little uncomfortable, I go back to that sitting behind the desk thing I talked about earlier. He would always sit across from them with nothing in between them to have that type of conversation. But anyway, he always talked about enjoying basketball is the foundation of all those rules, right? Everything gets really easy if you love the game, because you're not going to let being ineligible get in the way of you playing basketball. You're not going to let being suspended get in the way of you playing basketball, right? So people that love the game typically want to walk the right ways in the other parts of life.
Yeah, so true, man. Yeah. And what I love there, what you said, and I hope coaches pull from that, is it's okay to meet players where they are when you have those talks about other stuff. Sometimes it's the gym is the best place because that's where they're the most comfortable. So let's just go out and sit on the first row of the bleachers because there's nobody in here. It's 1 o'clock in the middle of the day or whatever, and we got a day off. Let's just go sit in the gym, or let's take a walk on campus. All right, jump in the car and, all right, man, where's your favorite? You got a smoothie spot here in town? Where you want to go?
Yep.
And so the power of meeting them where they are goes so far. And again, it's another door that you're kicking down, right? There's always a door to kick down. It's how hard do you need to kick it, and which leg are you using is sometimes what you need to figure out. But there's always going to be a door that you need to kick down to keep what you're building going and to keep growing and keep improving. But if players and their well-being is always at the center of what we're trying to do, we can't go wrong. So,
Coach, you've done this before, man. You know all the tricks. We had a season-changing meeting with me and my point guard at Smoothie King right up the road this year.
Smoothie King, that tropical smoothie. Those are some hot spots for people. If there's anything I've learned, though, you gave some great information, but it's don't catch Coach Owen on the other side of his main desk. Catch him at the round table. Because if you walk into the office on the other side of the desk, it's business. That's a scary. This has been awesome. Thank you a ton sharing.
So good.
Again, obviously the success that you guys have had and been able to sustain so far has been awesome, right? And it shows, it's a testament. And that right there, if you really encompass everything that we have said, we covered a little bit about on-court stuff, how to be able to pull people in and program guys that are going to help you on the court. But 90% of this was off the floor, right? The psychological side, the getting everybody close, the trust, the building of relationships. I think that's something that goes under the radar. People don't really, or people who are at least new into the profession, it goes under the radar. And sometimes even people who are established, that's something that needs to be built more.
Yeah. And I think if you know what my path is going to be, right? Like only God knows what my path is going to be. But if I ever have a platform and a voice, and I guess I maybe have an opportunity right here, is my message is always going to be like, it's God, family, basketball for me. And you, as a coach, you've got to have your foundation in the right place. And this job, we all know, can turn you astray, man, and lead you chasing after some idols. And I would just say to the coaches out there listening, man, you can be a great coach and a great father. You can be a great coach and a great husband at the same time at a high level. And you got to double dip a lot, man. You got to have your family around the program. There's no doubt. It takes too many hours to be a great coach and too many hours to be a great husband. But I just encourage all the coaches out there. I've got a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old. And I do every, luckily I have a wife that likes basketball. And so she'll bring them to practice and they come on the bus with us to some road games. But man, and it allows me to kind of reset, right? Like you're coming off a loss and you're frustrated and mad. But then all of a sudden I'm holding my 1-year-old and she's saying dad in that. But it's like, it brings back to center. And I just think there's too many guys out there that want to wear the badge of hardest worker, right? We've all been taught work hard, be the hardest worker, be the first one, last one. And look, man, there's merit to that. And last week I was on the phone until 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, talking to recruits on the West Coast. It takes what it takes, right? The work is the work. But I was also at the dinner table with my family, right? And the phone was off and I'm with my wife, with my kids. And man, I really believe this business can be, you can be led astray. And I know that there's going to be somebody listening that needs to hear this, man. Spend time with your kids, be a great husband, and your players are going to see that and feel that. And that's going to make you more trustworthy. And I'm not perfect in that area, right? I'm not trying to come off as the perfect example of that, but I do realize it's important and understand it's important and hope that people out there listening will understand how important that is to have your faith in a good place, to have your family in a good place, and that'll make you a much better basketball coach.
No, no doubt, man. Love it. Yeah, and even that in itself, all that's messy. It's all messy. But the effort, if the effort is there, that's what people are going to feel. So your family feels your effort.
Right.
And your players feel your effort. And so, again, even in its own messiness and imperfectness, they're going to feel where your heart is. And like you said, there's no work-life balance for us, right? You try to include your family as much as possible because there is no work-life balance.
Right.
But there can be work-life effort for the balance. And even though there's no perfect point in the middle of the seesaw with that stuff, but the effort and having your heart in the right place, that's huge, man. So, yeah, I would say there'd be slightly more than one person that needed to hear that for sure. One for sure. We all need to hear that. So, love it, man.
Just build better coaches, you build better people. That's exactly. Not only did you do that with the words that you just spewed, but also in the program, it sounds. So, that's awesome. But no, Coach, honestly, first off, I want to say shout out to Adam Gordon. I know he connected us, and I obviously he spoke extremely highly of you. So that's, and I think it all is a testament to what you have said these last handful of minutes. So thank you for sharing everything. Again, all the success that you have had speaks volumes. So it's awesome to be able to hear that side of things and look forward to being able to follow you along moving forward.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Of course. And to all of you, as we always say, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Coaches, keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all on the other side. Take care. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll be right back.
Are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.